I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We're back, very excited about this. This is the first time we've had him, not the first time on the show, but the first time in studio. Brad and I just gave him the tour of the place. His name is DeMichael Cole. You know him, you love him. He's the Grizzlies beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. A little bit earlier this week, he had the news that Tony Allen's jersey will indeed be raised to the rafters next season. At least that was coming from the horse's mouth. We know he's tied up all kinds of draft lottery stuff, everything else. So appreciate your time, first of all. And, man, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Most definitely, man. You know, anytime I get to come on 92.9, I enjoy it. But, to be in the studio, it's a little different. So
We got to get you to sign the board and do all that that comes with that. We'll probably take some pics and everything else. Beforehand, because so we make it official, you know what I'm saying?
Beforehand,
I must ask you, you are a Memphian that obviously came up, went to school here, just right. Like myself, and you are in, obviously, one of the most coveted jobs, I would imagine, for anybody that wants to get into this journalism thing, having that Memphis Grizzlies beat. How does it feel to be the guy in your hometown?
Man, it's so,
I'm sure you've been asked that, but I'm interested now, 3 seasons in, if the answer's changed.
Exactly.
At all.
It has. You know, when I first got here, it was kind of this, that, you know, that hometown kid, you get to come back and it's kind of like a surreal feeling, but it's synced in, you know, at this point. And I mean, it's confirmation in a way, because, you know, when I came here, I'm so thorough with my thought process. I thought to myself, like, man, I'm 25. Jumped into this beat writing gig, you know, it's a Grizzlies team that's on the rise. There's a high demand there. You know, I felt ready, but, you know, it's one thing to think you're ready, and then when you get in the situation and you get in that field, you know, you start to learn some things about yourself. And, man, and, you know, since I've been here, I'm enjoying it. On the court, you know, covering the team, chronicling that, and kind of putting my own touch and flavor on it, right?
And that's
the fun part about it to me. That's when I talk about confirmation, I'm not talking about the decision-making process. I'm talking about the process of people are recognizing my brand through the things that I want them to recognize it through, from the standpoint of whether it's me being at a game and someone will just come up to me, DeMichael, what shoes does this guy have on, or something like that, because they know that's something.
You can bring that to the table.
Exactly, or it's something cultural, or whether it's something even analytical to a certain degree, because I get into some of that stuff too. Like, people come up to me for different things, different perspectives on the Grizzlies beat that I try to personally bring. So that's one fun part about it. And then two, just
I love that.
Being home. You know, like it's so many stories. I mean, I was at a car dealership the other day and the guy was looking at me. He looked over a couple times and my dad's looking at me and whatnot. I'm like, I know what he's about to ask me. He's like, man, you like the Grizzlies, don't you? He says, yeah, that's where I know you from. That's where I know you. And literally, like, someone's pulled up beside me in traffic before, and I'm like, hold up. And they let the window down.
It's the biggest small town in the country, bro.
And you're like, Grizzlies beat writer. It's happened a few times, man. It's fun. You know, but it's confirmation.
I bet your dad beams, too, when that happens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, mom, dad.
Mom, dad, all of them.
Both of them, yeah, for sure.
What you said right there, it just got me back to, you know, when I was at the CA, covering the Tigers. My first year or two, I was so worried about trying to do as well
or what the guy before me. In mm-hmm. this case, it was Dan Walken, I think, who had been fantastic at the job, moved up national. You'd had Gary Parrish in that beat, right? So something that you said I'm going to relate it to. That first year, I'm just trying to be like them, right? As opposed to what you just said, finding myself. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until a couple of years in that, you know what, when I said I'm going to stop trying to be like the other previous beat writers, because, again, that Tigers beat had been a springboard for those folks to go national. When I decided to, man, I'm just going to be myself in this thing. Try to do the best job that I can do and maybe bring, like you're saying, you're bringing the culture to it. Maybe bring a little something different than what previous guys said and try to own that, right? Yeah. That's when I got the most comfortable, when I stopped trying to be like everybody else. It sounds like you got there much earlier than me, bro.
You took the words out of my mouth. I'm going to tell you exactly when it happened and for me, and it's wild that you actually caught that because a lot of people don't. But, you know, I'm born and raised in Memphis, but I went to school in Knoxville. I went to the University of Tennessee.
This is a UT man right here.
And
some folks will hate on you just for that.
Man, but you know, they know I bleed blue inside.
How can they? You're a hometown guy.
And I always, and exactly, my thing I always tell them is if that school's offering you a full ride, I applied to Memphis just like everybody else. They wasn't giving me the money that UT was giving me. So, you know, you got to make a business decision.
All day long.
But when I went to the University of Tennessee, that was my first deep experience outside of Memphis, where in a lot of classes, I'm the only black kid, or it's just a couple of us. And I'm just in a shadow for the first time. I'm very outspoken. Everybody knows I can go in any room, and my personality is going to shine. Yeah. Like, I'm not afraid of that. But that was the first time I'm going to the back of the classroom, sitting in the corner, got my hoodie on, got my feet kicked back, just doing my work, getting out of everybody's way. And it wasn't until my junior, senior year when I finally started, really my junior year, when I started covering football, basketball, and all that stuff, started to get out of my shell a little bit. And then when I got to Philly, you know, at the Enquirer, and that's when I started to embrace it, you know, because that was the second time. There were two culture shocks for me. That was the first one, leaving Memphis and just being, you know, in an area where it's just not a lot of people that look like me.
Bro,
and
East then, Tennessee. Yeah, we know it.
I went to Philly, and there were more people that looked like me necessarily, but still, like, culturally,
completely
religiously.
Culturally. Right.
I'm going to cookouts, and I'm like, oh, yeah, where the chicken wings and the Rotel? And they're like, man, we got jerk chicken. And I'm like,
cheesesteak.
Yeah, we got some cheesesteak. And it's just completely different. Mm-hmm. So all of those things kind of helped mold me from the perspective of, by the time I came back here, I already had that, like, confidence from the perspective of, I know who I am, and I know what I can bring, and I'm going to, because when I went to Knoxville, it was, oh, this is the guy from Memphis. When I went to Philly, definitely, it was like, oh, this is the down south. You know, they're catching every little word that I say, and you say going without the G on the end and things like that. They're catching little things about me that I never caught about myself. So you start to embrace that. So, you know, when I was in Philly, I had the sports culture gig, and that kind of would help leapfrog me into diving more into that as a beat writer as well.
Something else I know a lot of folks in Memphis know, but many probably do not, including our listeners. So there is a relation between you and the artist that has that puts together our opening song. Now, a little history on this real quick for you.
Okay.
J. Cole was our open.
Yeah.
When he got out of the beef, we said, no, this guy, he can't represent us anymore. And, of course, John and I, Brad was already playing Let's Go. So you and Key Glock, another Memphian, are related.
Yeah. That's my nephew. That's my
Key Glock is it? Let's Go. That song
that's
we
your
opened
nephew.
With.
That's my nephew.
That's the Michael's nephew.
Yep.
He comes from a very talented family. Clearly,
that's my sister's son. Crazy. That's my dad's grandson. Yeah, that's
biggest
nephew.
Small town in
Bro,
the country. It's
that's
more,
crazy.
More evidence of that. Yeah.
He's so big.
There ain't no question about it.
You've got his connections there, huh?
Yeah, he comes around every now and then. He's a big Kevin Durant fan, too. So, like, when you know Kevin Durant is playing in Memphis, there's a decent chance he'll probably come around and be at that game and whatnot. But, yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, he's around. He told me, you know, he loves my job, too. He said that's major, you know, in the words.
Dude, that is big time right there.
Sure.
I hope folks realize what a talented family that obviously must be. All right, when was the first time, I don't know, first news story, first tweet, whatever, whether it's with Ja or whatever else, where you saw it, and, like, it feels like to me, man, if you drew over the Daily Memphian, if y'all writing about Ja, and it happened with the suspension and everything else, but that goes to a different level in terms of how it resonates, not just here in Memphis, but around the country. Yeah. Was it from the first story that you wrote that you realized, my gosh, like, you know, this dude's a superstar and people outside of Memphis are gathering on him? Is that something that it took a while to understand? Or did you already, you foresaw that coming into the job?
Yeah, I mean, I knew coming into the job, like, of course, like, covering Ja Morant was a big reason, was a big selling point for me from the standpoint of I wanted to be one of those guys who covered one of those superstars as they kind of, you know, it's like
dude,
part
of. Look at Wendy.
Exactly. And McMenamin
right now.
Stephen A. Smith at once upon a time, and the list goes on.
Exactly. Stephen A. too.
There's so many examples, and those were the names that I thought of. You just said when it's like, okay, you know, there's a great opportunity in Memphis, home for me, to kind of cover an arc similar in those ways. And then it only helps that, you know, like a lot of the cultural things that I like to hit on just directly correlate to Ja and who he is. So it's like there's that. But I'll give you a couple examples because one was, you know, just the viral stuff, right? And that's when I knew this is because you wake up in the morning and you just got done writing about Ja. You turn the TV on. Now they're talking about Ja.
Right.
And your
notification's probably blown the heck up.
That's when you realize you are kind of front and center of the conversation. You know, it was so many times where, you know, I'd ask Ja a question, and then next thing you know, it's the number one talking point next
that
in the morning.
That answer's worldwide.
And exactly. Yep.
And you're the messenger.
That was one of the things that really stood out to me. And then the other was from the standpoint of the cultural side. Like, you know, I tried to get those stories beyond just the player on the court because I am of the belief that if you talk enough about a player off the floor, that's how fan engagement, like, you want to know the player that you like.
1,000%.
If you don't know the guy you like, I don't think you're really going to grow and, like, lynch on to them.
I think that point you're making is what's hurting college basketball because guys don't stay.
You
got a whole new team every
new
year. You want to know those guys. You want to see them grow. Those four-year players are the most beloved ones.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the thing. And one of the stories that I did on Ja very early on, and it was one of those culture stories. I was like, I'm just going to take a risk on it. And I went to Houston. And I went to Johnny Dang's jewelry store.
Yep.
Johnny Dang,
yep.
You know, very popular in the hip-hop community.
Yep.
And I just like, I'm just going to, we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it was by far, like, one of my most engaged stories that I've written here, you know, from an engagement perspective. Like, it the numbers were wild on that one. So,
yeah. Dude, I loved that story. And I felt like it was one of those stories that we wouldn't have gotten.
Yeah.
From you know, whether it's just a general assignments reporter doing it, but or the beat writer himself, not something that we would typically get. Man, you're absolutely bringing that to the table. We're talking to DeMichael Cole, Commercial Appeal, Grizzlies beat writer. He's fantastic. You should be reading his work if you're not already. I mean, it's been three seasons now. You got all the city locked into you now. I ain't telling nobody that nothing that they don't already know. All right, moving on to the Grizzlies.
Yeah.
Got the draft lottery coming up, obviously. We'll figure out on Sunday where they're going to be picking. We got the news. Tayshaun's going to be up there representing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the pick's going to determine what you can get. But in terms of biggest need, as you see it, is it a young center? Is it a guy like Reed Shepard that can play, you know, on ball and bring some shooting in here? Is it Castle? Is it a wing? Just in terms of need, and I realize, you know, some of this will be determined by where you get, because you can't get a SAR if you're not up one or two.
Right.
What do they need most in your eyes?
The easy answer here is the big, right? Mm-hmm. That's what they've said the most. It's clearly, if you just look at the roster, where the depth is, where the depth lacks, it's another big. And getting to the lottery point, you're probably going to have to be in the top four to get the big that you desire.
That's key.
You know, SAR, Klingon, whoever the case may be. Those are the only two bigs that are consensus lottery across most boards, whereas there are other guys that are mid first round picks and things like that. But here's my perspective. This is my unique perspective on the need conversation. I would not be opposed to a wing that can play the two and three, and I know there's depth there, but people got to realize this is the first time from a financial perspective that the Grizzlies are in this position where Ja Morant is a max player. Desmond Bane is a max player. Jaren Jackson Jr. has, you know, over $100 million contracts, making over $25 million this season. But his contract extension is potentially going to come next offseason.
Right.
And that could be a $250 to $300 million deal. Like, he's going to surpass Ja Morant and Dez if he, you know, stays on this trajectory.
Yep.
So when you factor in all of that,
major
they know
crunch.
It's going to be a crunch. So you got to start hitting, you know, pennies on the margins. Like, you got to get the bang for your buck with these picks. So with that being said, think of a guy like Luke Kennard. Very valuable to the team right now.
Mm-hmm.
$14.7 million team option. Makes all the sense in the world to bring him back. Now, if you can get him on a longer-term deal, this point kind of becomes moot. But let's say the Grizzlies and Luke Kennard can't agree on anything beyond this season at this point.
Right.
It's going to be hard to bring him back next season at a desirable salary because other teams are going to covet that level of shooting. I say, hey, get one year. You always want to be a year ahead of a problem, or this you never want to be a year too late.
Right.
You never want to draft a need just because you don't have it on the roster. It's great to have someone waiting in the wings, and I think with all the guards, like if you get past those couple bigs, from 3 to 15, there are so many potential guard prospects in this draft. Find the one that fits best from a shooting standpoint that can kind of help you transition into a post-Luke Kennard era. I think, you know, that makes a lot of sense to me. If the Grizzlies go guard, people are going to say, oh, we don't need that guy right now. But if you lose Luke Kennard after this season, he steps right in, becomes one of your better shooters, and is an impact player off the bench. And he's making $4 or $5 million a year.
Yeah, no, I think that's well thought through. If they go that route, you know, what do you envision them doing at the center position?
You gotta go through free agency. I think is the easiest.
What kind of guy can you get?
Just,
and I'm not looking for names, but in terms of
you just need a dirty work guy. My thoughts is you got three guys in the starting lineup who can average 20 points per game. That's all you need. You don't need another guy who's going to be dribbling behind his back, shooting step-back threes. You just need, to a lesser degree, like a Steven Adams type of player. You need someone who's going to be okay with setting the screens, grabbing the rebounds. When Jaren Jackson Jr. is out on the perimeter, someone who can protect the rim, you know, in that case. That's all you need. You don't need someone who's going to do
that. What's your confidence level that they can get that guy at the price they want?
Very confident, because here's the thing. The NBA doesn't value centers anymore. And it doesn't even look like Joel Embiid, Jokic, and Rudy Gobert's success is changing that. Like, I compare the center position in the NBA to the running back position in the NFL. Like, Saquon Barkley and Christian McCaffrey's success is not changing the fact that running backs, as we saw in the recent NFL draft, ain't going in the first round.
Yeah.
And centers, I think the DeAndre Ayton draft, the Jaren Jackson Jr., you know, that draft, that was the one that kind of solidified it, where we saw DeAndre Ayton, and then Luka, Trae Young, Jaren Jackson Jr. all go behind him. And it's like, okay, look, we're done with these centers.
Yeah.
So I think Mitchell Robinson, you know, he just got paid in New York $15 million a year. That's kind of going to be the going price for a lot of these centers. And then that second level, you can get a guy mid-level exception and potentially even the minimum. So I think the center is a position where you get more value, you know, than others.
One of the obviously, this ain't news to you. One of the silver linings of this year, a down year, was the development of Vince Williams and Gigi Jackson. How do you sort of see them being worked in next year? How high are those two in your eyes in the pecking order?
Yeah, I think Vince Williams is up there. Like he's put the work in, and he has that understanding. And what I mean by that is Vince Williams is comfortable saying, I take 2-3 shots. Ja, Dez, Jaren, you take all those shots. I'm going to set some screens for you. I'm going to go get these rebounds.
Right.
He's comfortable with that role, and he wants to thrive in that role. Gigi Jackson wants to shoot. Gigi Jackson
all
wants
day.
To get his shots up. Gigi Jackson's not getting enough shots. Somebody better find him some shots. So, you know, that's just the reality of it. So that's the difference, you know, in those perspectives. But that's why when we talk about who should be the starter if Marcus Smart isn't in the picture or whatever the case may be, I lean towards Vince Williams from that standpoint, and then Gigi Jackson can thrive more so in that bench role where his scoring ability is going to, you know, be needed a little bit more. But I think both of those guys, more so Vince, because we've seen him play alongside of Dez, Jaren, and those guys a little bit more. Even I go back to that first game against the Pelicans that y'all got back December 19th. Mm-hmm. People forget Marcus Smart didn't play in that game. Vince Williams was the other starter, and he was the one who sparked the comeback in that second quarter when they were struggling down 18, 19, 20 points. He hit the shot before halftime, looked over at C.J. McCollum, talked a little trash, and then, you know, Ja did what he did in the second half and whatnot.
I've always just assumed sort of that they're going to start the year with Marcus Smart in that spot, just based on what they've invested, that Golden State pick and everything else,
and
the fact that I think it was the last three games before he got injured, he had gone first time in his career maybe or something like that, to over 20. Like
he was balling.
He was balling, and he was in the spot that you had sort of envisioned, and obviously all that sort of fell apart. Are you feel the same? Will they start next year, you figure, with Marcus Smart, and you figure it out, and maybe it's a trade deadline thing? Mm-hmm. I mean, is that just in terms of what you
I think so.
Okay.
I think Marcus Smart, if he's here, he's starting. Because, like you said, when we saw – we didn't get to see it a lot, and that's – You know, when people talk about when people talk about this season, what we missed the most, to me, it wasn't just the fact that Ja only played 9 games. It was the fact you didn't see Ja, Dez, Jaren, and Marcus enough, or even Steven with those guys enough to say, okay, we can win a championship with this group.
You can't make a decision.
You don't know this offseason if that is a championship group. You're hopeful, but we don't have enough data. But with that being said, in those games that they played together, I mean, Marcus Smart, I mean, you mentioned, I mean, that go everyone should watch that Lakers game. There's a couple games you just watch and you see it at peak performance.
The
they went on the road against the Lakers, Marcus Smart over 20, Ja over 20, Jaren over 20, Dez over 20, and they beat the Lakers down. And that was a Lakers team that was trying to make a charge, you know, to get in the position that they ended up in.
I still feel like, too, and it feels like you got to get back to contender status just because the certain is that you've only got Jaren for the 2 more years, although obviously you're hoping for an extension there, but that Marcus, too, you know, maybe even the regular season it doesn't look all that good, but the payoff still could be the experience he brings. In terms of you trying to be a contender, well, Marcus Smart's playoff experience helps you there. Whether he's starting or coming off the bench as a sixth man just feels like he could be valuable in that role. I mean, are the expectations that high, you feel like? I mean, that this team should be top six next year, like all us fans and talking heads are saying? You feel like that's where it should be next year, too?
Without a doubt, because the biggest thing in the NBA is continuity, and it gets overlooked so much. Like, people are saying, oh, the Suns, the biggest disappointment in history. And I'm like, no, because Bradley Beal started the year injured. Then he came back, and Devin Booker was hurt. And then, you know, they played, 50 games together as a trio and whatever the case may be, and it's year one.
Right.
And I also go back to, like, the Timberwolves are giving us good data on that as well. People were writing stories, it's the Gobert trade, one of the worst trades.
I was one of them that thought so.
In
so,
NBA history.
So wrong.
Last season. It was just a year ago. And now it looks like one of the best.
You have to be able to have time to work it out.
Got
same
to.
Thing with Dame and Giannis in a way.
Exactly. Yeah. Same case scenario. They could very well come back next season and look like a whole nother monster. But the point has how that relates to the Grizzlies is Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jaren Jackson Jr. can jump on the floor next season. And it's like riding a bike.
Yeah.
And they've said this. You know, they're going to jump on the floor. And they know where each other likes the ball. And it's just putting the pieces around those guys. So from a continuity standpoint, the Grizzlies, even though this season went the way it did, they're going to be there. They've won in the data. I mean, they won 56 games a couple years ago. They won 51 last season amid the jaw injury suspension stuff, so they probably would have won 56 again. They're going to be right there. Like, the question for them is more or less about the playoffs than the regular season. It's the shooting when, you know, the defenses step it up a little bit, get a little bit more physical, take away Ja's ability to score in the paint. You know, they're going to be a little bit more touchy in the playoffs. Yep. So that's going to be the question. Regular season, they're going to blow past a lot of these teams, I think.
Watching Ja as closely as you have, is there an adjustment to his game that he can make? Is it necessary in your eyes in terms of, you mentioned it, I mean, continuity, part of that is durability and being available. Does he? I mean, we watch Derrick Rose. We all, you know, coming out of Memphis and everything else and, you know, youngest MVP and how much the knees tore him up. We watched Penny Hardaway, who was this violent dunker and everything else, and eventually that all kind of came back in terms of those knees giving out. Do you feel like there needs to be a change necessarily and sort of, you know, his aggressiveness and everything else to help with that? Or is this, you know, are injuries random? Ja, just be yourself, do what you do.
I think so. And the bigger thing is he thinks so, too. So one thing that we didn't get to – another thing, I mean, a lot of things we didn't get to see play out this season. But one of those things, if you watch those 9 games, a lot of people probably just chalked it up to conditioning or whatever the case may be. Ja didn't come back trying to tear the rim off the goal. And – a little bit of it early on was conditioning, you know, saving, conserving energy and whatnot. But he said it to me, you know, in the locker room one day, just that, you know, I'm going to be a little different now. I'm not about to, you know, try to dunk all over guys. And it made sense. If you watch that playoff series against the Lakers, like, he's doing, I mean, cartwheels on the floor, it looks like, at times when he's flying through the air. I think it was LeBron or Anthony Davis came up beside him and he hurt his hand in that series and could hardly dribble and all that. Like, there were so many cases where Ja fell down in FedEx Forum and you just hear a, like, everyone would take a deep breath. But he has made it up in his mind, and we're going to see it play out over a full course of the season, next season, that it's going to be smarter. It's going to be more two-handed finishes, not rim-rattling dunks, just
pull-ups and floaters, maybe?
Pull-ups and floaters, for sure. Well, floaters more so than pull-ups. I mean, I don't know what his mid-range game is going to look like just yet at this point, but definitely the floater and easier dunks. Like, that's definitely something that he's working on.
And then real quick, Jaren's season. Mm-hmm. I noticed he didn't get a vote for not one for mm-hmm. Defensive Player of the Year mm-hmm. coming off the year he had last year. He led the league in blocks. Did you see I realize part of this is you're now being dependent on, especially through with all the injuries and everything else, so much more offensively. And so we saw reading you that usage rate goes up through the roof and everything else. And obviously it's going to lead to a decline. Did you see anything different though in terms of his approach? Or did you see a drop off defensively that you can't correlate to the he's having to play more offense on the other end?
Yeah, just minor. I mean, I think overall the blocks went down.
And he didn't have the big next to him that sort of allows him to roam as freely, I guess, too,
that's,
is part of
that's
it.
That's the biggest key. You know, when he's playing the five, he's that back line of defense a little bit more. Whereas you watch a couple seasons ago and the year before that when he's just getting all these blocks, a lot of it is as the help defender and he's just coming over and swatting it from behind a guy and whatnot. So it was a lot of that. Whereas this season, he didn't get to do much of that. You know, he's getting guys posting up, going into his chest a little bit more, and it's hard for guys in that situation. So, yeah, I think that was more of it. But also, when he played the five, his steals went up, you know, deflections, things like that. So his activity was still there. It just looked different. And you talk about the defensive player of the year stuff. People want to see him block three shots a game and all that. Mm-hmm. So when they see – they're not looking at deflections and all that stuff. Yeah.
Are we headed for an OKC – Minnesota Western Conference Finals?
I think so. That's the way I picked it.
Brad and I were just talking about how much we fear them now, them getting this experience. You know, while we sort of stood, Grizzlies stood pat this year for reasons we know. But, you know, imagine the confidence that comes with knocking off a defending champ if Minnesota goes on to do that. Yeah. OKC absolutely rolling in terms of where they are and where you are.
Yeah.
Should we be in fear? Or are you gonna tell us everything's all right?
It's different for each team. I think with Oklahoma, there's no fear there because Grizzlies will match up well against them. You know, Jaren,
I would agree.
They match up well against that team. Whereas I think with Minnesota, that was a team that we talk about the playoff series, whether it's Timberwolves, Golden State, Lakers. You can make the argument that Minnesota defended Ja better than any of those teams. And with that being the case, now you add Rudy Gobert, who they didn't have. I mean, they had Jaden McDaniels. Right. They had Jared Vanderbilt.
They were not the number one defense in the league back then.
No, but they weren't giving Ja much at the rim then. So what do you think they're going to give him now when you got Rudy Gobert, who's going to step up when you try to do that floater? And if you get past Rudy Gobert, you got Karl Anthony Towns flying over there to you, or Anthony Edwards coming from the weak side trying to avoid hitting his head on the rim. So they're the team that I think – it's all about matchups in the Western Conference. Like, I feel like the Suns would have played the Nuggets. I think I was saying it from the jump. If the Suns play the Nuggets, they beat the Nuggets. But if the Timberwolves play the Nuggets, the Timberwolves beat the Nuggets. The Western Conference is so tight, it's matchup-based for the most part. I don't think there's any team that's just going to blitz through the entire Western Conference from a talent perspective.
Last thing I got before I get you out of here, because I know you got work to do. Are either of them, or even if Denver comes back, or if Dallas surprises us, can either of them – specifically OKC and Minnesota, they're so young and haven't been to that point. Any of them knocking off the Celtics?
I think Minnesota can.
You think they're that ready?
I think they're that good. I mean, the thing is, it depends on which side of the ball that you're really good on, and they're good defensively. Defense is going to translate. That's why they're winning on the road in Denver, because it's defense.
They are making Denver look bad.
If you're the number one offense in the NBA and you got like the ninth or tenth ranked defense, you're inconsistent defensively, those are the teams that tend to flame out in the playoffs a little bit, you know, more, because that offense isn't going to be – it's not going to come – it's not going to flow as easy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Jaden McDaniels' defense is not going to slump. Anthony Edwards' defense is not going to slump. Mike Conley's defense is not going to slump. The shooting may slump, but they're going to guard. The Celtics are going to guard. The Celtics are going to shoot a lot. And I think just from a matchup perspective, that team makes the most sense. I think they can win it all.
Man, I supposed to thought you're supposed to hit your head against it for a little while before you get it, like the old Bulls, and like it feels like
you're
these Celtics
to.
Eventually. But you say these boys could be foolproof.
I mean, in a way, they have, though. You know, last season, now, Jaden McDaniels was out.
Got put out by Denver?
Yep. Jaden McDaniels was out. Nas Reed was out. That was when Jaden McDaniels,
that's right.
he hit his hand on the thing
that's
and
right,
broke his wrist. And then, of course, the Grizzlies beat them the year before that. A lot of those guys were there. Rudy Gobert is kind of, you know, the difference. Of course, they went and got Conley. And Conley's battle-tested. Like, he's not new to this.
Yeah.
So a lot of these guys have been here before. Even Nikhil Alexander-Walker, he was in Utah. You know, they were a very competitive team. So they got different pieces. Kyle Anderson, same thing. Like, all these guys pretty much have been around.
No doubt.
So it's just putting it together.
Well, brother, this was fantastic. Really, really enjoyed it. Man, we got to do it again.
Oh, yeah.
Again, if you guys aren't reading DeMichael, I know all of Memphis is now, but if you're not, you should be reading him over at commercialappeal.com. Fantastic what he does and what else he's bringing to the table. Things that we haven't been able, he's bringing the culture to the table. And that's a great thing here in Memphis. Again, man, appreciate your time.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.